Thank you, Mark. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss this with you. This started as probably simple musings 12 months ago, and then we decided maybe it was time to do more than just muse. So we sought external funding for this, and the jury, so to speak, is still out. We just submitted this about a week ago, I guess it was. So if you guys have never gone through that process before, I highly encourage it. It's really an enjoyable process, especially when you work on several simultaneously. My grad students don't see the humor in that, but I want this to be interactive, all right? So I'm going to maybe throw out some underlying issues and a potential framework that we've discussed for this. So the situation, I would argue, is that the global animal breeding and genetics community has done a tremendous job really at increasing scientific knowledge, developing selection tools, and delivering these tools to the beef industry through national cattle evaluation. And you guys that have been around for the past couple days have seen a lot of the more recent evolutions in that. However, despite these advancements, technology adoption has been, I would argue, embarrassingly poor. And that's obviously, you guys are at BIF, so that finger's not pointed at you. But you may have cattle-producing colleagues at home that don't follow the same practices that you do. And I'd point to a World Genetics Conference paper, pardon me, by Bob Weber. Bob led a national survey effort and asked several questions about genetic selection tools that were used by commercial beef cattle producers. And those responses are absolutely shocking. It almost makes you stop and ask, was anyone ever paying attention in close to the last 50 years of BIF? Because the majority of those respondents didn't put their primary selection emphasis on expected progeny differences, and where they sought information was from almost anyone but the ilk represented in this room. Right, it wasn't from scientists, it wasn't from breed organizations, it wasn't from extension personnel, it was from, actually number one was unpaid consultants, which that's their neighbor, right? So I think there's some reasons for this, and my thesis would be that poor technology adoption is really related to the sum of a lot of underlying issues. I know this is a bit hard to see, but genetic prediction to the layperson seems very opaque. So I often kid my ruminant nutrition colleagues that what they do is readily adopted because people see it. I change a diet, I tell them to feed it, they weigh the cattle, and they see a difference. I'm told by them that ruminant nutrition is far more complex than that, but I'm not 100% confident that that's true. What we do, though, does seem opaque. So we throw up the mixed model equations. Now we throw up augmentations to that because of a genomic selection paradigm, and then we say we're going to reduce that to a single numerical value and use that to select sires because that sire is nothing more than an envelope or a vector of genetics. And what he looks like really is immaterial. And it's hard to convince people that, in fact, that's the case. Consultancy, to my earlier point, is often from sources other than those that we might prefer, right? It's often not educated advice. Commercial producers, in general, I would argue, and this is not to be meant to be a criticism, it's that often don't have the needed time to excel in all areas. Time is focused on routine day-to-day management, be it nutrition, be it reproduction, financial management, employee management, or otherwise, and genetic selection decisions are made once a year at bull buying time. And combining all partial solutions can be a very cumbersome task. So identifying a breeding objective, setting up a breeding system, choosing which breeds enter into that, which traits should be emphasized from an economic perspective, and then sire selection, contemplating multiple breeds and multiple sires within those breeds. So trying to decide what breeds to enter into a crossbreeding system, how much heterosis does that allow me, which breeds do I need to use, and which individuals within those breeds. And then put on top of that, you have to select on that which is economical and possible given environmental constraints, be it land, labor, feed, whatever. That's a lot to ask of somebody as they flip through a paper bull sale catalog. In fact, it's unrealistic, absolutely unrealistic. So the critical need is a web-based decision support tool to aid in really combining all sources of information towards sire selection decisions that are economically focused, and assistance in determining the value proposition of increased information content. So that's a fancy way of saying, what is the value of me generating and potentially paying for additional phenotypes that may not otherwise be readily available to me? And moreover, what is the value to both me and my bull customers, my clientele, in spending money to genotype to improve the accuracy of prediction? I would argue a lot of these things right now are relatively opaque. So the current partial solutions that we have global estimates of heterosis. We can refine those into biological type estimates. In the future, hopefully, we can further refine that into breed-specific estimates. We have a plethora of EPDs. National Cattle Evaluation's done a tremendous job at generating a lot of EPDs, right? And they're useful tools, but again, to whittle that down into what is truly relevant to me and my scenario is a challenge. Because not all of these are economically relevant. Not all of them are. There's a lot of indicators there. There's a lot of projects centered on genomic discovery for novel traits, feed efficiency, disease susceptibility, fertility, etc. But a legitimate question is, where do these fit into our decision-making process? And furthermore, what is the value and generating more of just these phenotypes, not just for continued genomic discovery, but also for entry into national cattle evaluation as phenotypes themselves. We also have bioeconomic indices now. See Mike McNeil's in the back, who's done a tremendous amount of work with the U.S. beef industry and elsewhere in this regard. We do know that they're relatively robust against changes in costs and returns, as long as those relationships hold fairly constant. I suppose a producer criticism of them is they're kind of one size fits all, but we know even in that respect they're fairly robust because of the point above. But we've also greatly increased the number of bioeconomic indices we have. And that's kind of counterproductive, in my opinion, to what indices were always meant to be. So we've got a lot of different partial solutions, but it's bringing all of them together. And the current status, I would argue, is one of confusion. For those academicians in the group who have never flipped through a bull sale catalog or an AI stud catalog, I encourage you to do so and understand exactly the paradigm that exists. We have a lot of different traits up here, calving ease, birth weight, weaning weight, yearling weight, so on and so forth. Adjusted measurements, ratios, EPDs, and perhaps corresponding accuracy values for those EPDs. And obviously, the majority of us in this room, I would hope, would chuckle at the fact that anyone would actually use anything other than these EPDs. But I refer you back to the first slide and the survey results, and actually using everything but the EPDs is fairly pervasive. So somehow we have to combine all this into an easier decision-making process. The worst part about it is when people get confused with all of this, they defer to visual appraisal. So we tend to regress in our decision-making processes then. Ignacy, people mess up when they visually appraise cattle too, because this animal was the champion bull in 1915 and was the champion steer in 1916. So his phenotype stayed consistent across 2 years, but somebody decided not to make him a breeding animal. this is not altogether a new concept. Certainly, there have been past attempts at decision support software. Point out DESI, the Colorado beef cow production model, more recently efforts at Colorado State University, I think principally with Red Angus. But some of these attempts, I think, did not reach the level of adoption we might have hoped because of these few issues. The level of information required by the user was just too detailed, just far too detailed. And as a consequence, it didn't really alleviate the cumbersome nature of what they were already going through. Unit cost of production metrics are generally unknown at the firm level. Commercial producers, generally speaking, and again, this is not to the commercial producers in the room, it's to the people not here, don't have a firm grasp on what their unit cost of production is, right? They may know I fed X number of bales of hay, but more detailed than that is a bit of a challenge. I'd also say there's been a general lack of funding to support the initiation and probably more importantly, the continuation of these kinds of efforts. We put a lot of money and resources into other areas in genetic improvement and have not necessarily focused on these. So our goal is to develop a web-based decision support tool that combines all partial solutions towards a sire selection recommendation tool that's really based on relative economic value to a firm or to a producer. This tool could also provide guidance in an economic framework as to the value of added information, and I'll talk more about that later on. I think Larry alluded to this in a talk he gave yesterday. So this is just kind of a pictorial overview of what a framework might look like for something like this. So conceptual in nature, and I'll just kind of quickly walk you through it. You could envision that a user, a producer, could actually sit down and enter information about their particular situation, inputs like when they market cattle, relative feed costs, what their cattle weighed at the desired selling point, general breed composition about their cow base, things like that. Behind the scenes, if you will, some external parameters, a crossbreed EPD adjustment factors to allow the direct comparison of bulls across breeds, known heterosis effects, and we would need to take advantage of EPD from breed associations via an interface. So we run a simulation model behind the scenes, and really at the end of the day, what we're wanting to do is based on the parameters inputted by the producer and what we know, we could develop an economic index that caters to them. But the more important thing is produce a report for them that ranks a list of candidate sires based on their relative value. So if they're going to a particular sale, they know these 100 bulls are on offer. What is the value of those sires to me and the difference in the value of those sires to me? So seed stock guys may not like that because you think, holy cow, now all of a sudden I don't have that one bull that everyone's going to bid on. This isn't a good deal for me. But actually it is, because now all of a sudden every single guy that comes to your place has a different bull potentially that's number one. So all of a sudden, as every seed stock guy knows, you want a buyer for all of them. Well, you just got it. You just got it. And then you have customers that can go home with something that really best fit them. The other nice thing is, of course, this is web-based. That list I told you about could very well be in an app kind of platform. So the knowledge gaps that exist to make this work, a crossbreed EPD needs to be expanded further than just growth and carcass traits to include other economically relevant traits such as calving ease, heifer pregnancy and stayability. These things that are non-normally distributed really don't lend themselves the table of additive adjustment factors handed out at BIF on an annual basis. The other nicety of this is there's no reason why those updates could not be made in a more turnkey fashion instead of just simply annually in paper copy form. Heterosis estimates could also be expanded. And I know this probably leads into a talk that's coming up after this, but to get at some more refined estimates of heterosis, perhaps at the breed-specific level, and even breed effects in general, we're not going to be able to reliably estimate those from breed association field data. And so really need to rely on estimates coming from the U.S. Meat Animal Research Center. Ease of use. I mentioned earlier perhaps some of the shortcomings of other efforts in this area. Although we'd really like to believe that every user of it would know the level of detail we think is perfect, but that's not going to happen. And so the input needs to be in a tiered system whereby if all you know is the region where you live, your cows are predominantly black, you sell at weaning, you keep back replacement heifers, you can still garner value from this tool. But it also needs to be scalable to allow for additional detailed information. So people that actually do collect more kind of firm-level input data could further refine their decisions. So to combine these partial solutions, we can actually use stochastic approaches. So modeling of genetic merit, really the error associated with EPDs, the standard error prediction, variability in the accuracy of corresponding genomic predictors, and economic variability as well. And it needs to evaluate alternate planting horizons. So current production levels in a given environment, so at the producer level, and then depending on when their chosen marketing endpoints are, so weaning, retained ownership, grid or commodity, and so forth. The other thing I think we can do is what I'd call value discovery, and that's for additional information. So there's several economically relevant traits that are not currently evaluated nor collected routinely in the seed stock sector, but they do drive value downstream. So I think Mike mentioned this morning in terms of cow herd efficiency, and I didn't catch the whole thing. I thought a take-home point was we need to collect component traits. That may be an oversimplification. But reproductive phenotypes, longevity, disease, and maybe coming from the feedlot sector, that's pulls, treatments, mortality, routine carcass data, and then things that might drive packing plant value, dart cutters, blood splash, et cetera. These aren't things we're normally going to get in our seed stock cow herds, but do drive value downstream. And in order to engage the commercial sector of the industry to get those phenotypes that enter into national cattle evaluation, we have to know what they're worth because we're going to have to pay for them. And I think that could be worthwhile not only for traditional phenotypic-based national cattle evaluation, but is also in a genomic era where we may need far more additional phenotypes for these kinds of traits than we routinely collect in experiment stations. Trade-offs, of course, these phenotypes aren't free, and the value is related to the value of improved accuracy. And quantifying the value of accuracy is really required before seed stock producers or breed associations can know what they're willing to pay for that additional information. So just a reminder to everyone in the audience, the majority of you don't need reminded about this, but the whole accuracy bit, I can't put everyone's favorite breed up here, so just pick one. This bull has a weaning weight of 40, okay, BIF accuracy of 0.6. From the Hereford possible change table, I can determine that value or the standard error prediction is 4.6. So then I can begin to put a confidence interval around where his true EPD sits. And so the question is, as I change that, so here the red bar is a lower accuracy bull, the blue bar a high accuracy bull, what's the value proposition as a commercial producer for buying the bull in blue versus the bull in red? That's the question, which tells me then how much more should I pay for a bull that's been genomically tested, or how much more should I pay for phenotypes coming in to get me to that level? And, of course, the crux of it for reproduction traits or lowly heritable ones, BIF accuracy scale here, true accuracy over here, lowly heritable. To reach high accuracy values, we need a lot of daughters in production with phenotypes coming back in to breed associations, and that can take a long, long time. The other thing is, if stayability is something we stay with, I'm really not confident seed stock herds is where we should be measuring that. We should likely be turning over cows much faster than that. Stayability should be coming from the commercial cow-calf sector. So those kinds of records should be flowing in from there. And then, of course, the genomics bit. Use this slide a lot. It's starting to get a bit worn, I think. But if we explain about 40% of the genetic variation in a trait, you can see when they're low, this is BIF scale accuracy, low or even moderate, we do see increases in accuracy. Black bar is accuracy before inclusion of genomics. Light gray is the increase after we did so. But the question, again, is economically, what's the value of this improvement? So although genotyping can increase the accuracy of EPD, it does represent additional cost above phenotyping. And the accuracy of the decision, or which bull we go home with, changes as we begin to change the accuracy around the EPD. Sparse phenotypes that I mentioned before will be needed to fully exploit our genomic investment. So we're going to have to continue to collect phenotypes to truly exploit all the money we've spent in genomic genomic discovery in these phenotypes already. If we can quantify this kind of thing, the improvement in accuracy, it does provide a feedback loop and potential pull-through of the technology. To do all of this, though, still requires kind of a train-the-trainer approach. And so in the grant, we did mention this, and this is something Bob Weber, should we be funded, would really take charge over. The benefits to this of the commercial producers, I would hope, would be obvious. The benefits to the seed stock sector, as I mentioned, can help clientele become more profitable, which your profit is directly tied to their profit, obviously. Candidate sires can be ranked based on their relative economic value. And so the neat thing about that, if you really stop and think about it, the number one bull on my list, if he sells for $2,000 more than I thought he was worth to me, it may be the best economic decision I can make to go to the fifth bull on my list if he sold for $1,000 less than what he was worth for me. So choosing what is economical. And so seed stock producers, breed association personnel, and extension personnel would be targeted for training and able to use this tool and advise clientele. The other neat thing about it is I think something like this could be a tremendous asset in our university settings. I don't know about you guys, but at the University of Nebraska, the students with a background in beef production is dramatically declining. Probably surprises you from Nebraska, that's the case. Less than a third of our students indicate an interest in beef cattle production. About the same number indicate an interest in companion animals, right? That's a bit different. I'll put it that way. There's pros and cons to that. But a web-based tool like this, I think, could be very effective in undergraduate beef production, beef systems, and even animal breeding courses, realizing that the majority of those students will have absolutely no background in production and will need a framework to marry together routine animal management as well as genetic decisions. To make something like this work, partnerships are required, and so breed association partnerships are key. Okay, absolutely key to make this work because we need access to essentially databases to be able to make this work. And I would say that this effort that I've described would not wait for 100% participation by all breed organizations. So we wouldn't wait for everyone to get on the ship before we took off. So you take the partners that are there and work with them. So to kind of summarize, and hopefully there is discussion or arguments about why this would never work, there have been tremendous investments in both time and money in terms of scientific discovery, national cattle evaluation infrastructure, and education of clientele. But despite this large investment, technology adoption continues to lag, and that creates inefficiencies. The other thing that it creates, and we talk a lot about who's going to take over your respective ranches someday, right, bringing the next generation home. I don't lay awake at night worrying about that. I worry about who's going to take over Gary Bennett's job, Ignacy Mastal's job, okay, Mark's job. That's what I lay awake at night worrying about, because it's more lucrative to do other things, and it can sometimes be depressing to spend a lot of time talking about why you should use EPDs and why you should crossbreed. So our technology adoption curve is going to be directly related to engaging a talented young group of people to be the next generation of scientists. Decision support has always been needed, and past efforts can be used to revisit this critical area, and we can build on top of that. But sustainability of this kind of thing, so for instance, say we're grant-funded, our interest isn't to do it for 4 years, it's to provide something that can live on. And as a consequence, again, breed association partnerships would be critical, because the goal would be to hand it over to them. And so you can imagine this tool running with a IGS logo on it, okay, an AGI logo on it, whatever logo you want on it, so it could be branded, but still running with the framework we built in the background. So a germane question, and Mark, if the audience says no, then we spent 2 months of our lives. but a germane question is, would you guys use this? And if so, what important things should we contemplate? And so I'd like to just acknowledge the group that kind of worked with me on this, actually did a tremendous amount of the heavy lifting, the folks at Mark, Larry Warren and Mark, Bob Weber at Kansas State, Bruce Golden, now with Theta Solutions, Mark N., Scott Spidell, Milt Thomas, Animal Breeders at Colorado State, Marshall Frazier, very good firm-level ag economist at Colorado State, and a former graduate student of his that's at the University of Wyoming in the Ag Econ Department, John Ritten. So with that, Mark, I'd be happy to take any comments or questions.